There's a lot more to Twitter than lib spill memes and running commentary on your favourite television shows. I promise, there really is. I know it doesn't seem that way this week. It's also a great place to look at how we speak to each other in casual settings. Just ask Gretchen McCulloch, a linguist in Montreal, Canada. It surprises me that a linguist would love Twitter. Doesn't the 140 character limit make people do all kinds of terrible things, massacre language?
No, I think Twitter is actually really great for linguistics, and I think any linguist will agree with you on that. So linguists aren't so much interested in proper grammar as they are in how people actually talk in a real-life, authentic setting. You can think of it like if you studied birds, you aren't going around telling the birds they're tweeting incorrectly. So I'm not going around telling people they're talking incorrectly. I'm really interested in how they're talking when they don't feel like they're being observed. And before social media like Twitter, I'd have to go put a, you know, recording device in someone's living room, which is obviously not ethically something I can do. Whereas on Twitter, I can search what people are tweeting about, and I can see their language in natural context, and so can other linguists who are looking at how people use language in real life.
So how do you use Twitter for your research?
So one of the big things that I do for Twitter is I mine it for example sentences of different things that I'm interested in looking at. A while back, I was looking at how people use the Y/Y construction. So sometimes you might say, I need to buy this hat, Y/Y, question mark, meaning yes, yes, or yes. So before you could say, oh, yes or no. No, do I need to buy this hat? But Y/Y implies that I really think I do need to buy this hat, and it's not... I just want my audience to agree with me. And so when I was looking for some really interesting examples of that, I turned to Twitter, I searched for some examples, I found some that I was able to quote from people, and, you know, there they are in real life, and these people, they knew they were posting publicly, but they didn't necessarily think a linguist was going to come along and analyze that. So I think it's where you got really authentic language.
I'm now very scared. There's linguists lurking in the Twitter sphere seeing how we all use language. God, it's so frightening.
I try to only quote people who have a certain number of followers, so I don't want somebody who only has 10 followers to suddenly find themselves in an article.
What's your follower criteria for whether you'll analyze someone's use of language?
I try to aim for people with more than 5,000 followers. It doesn't always work if I'm looking for something a little bit more obscure, but I try to go for, you know, quite a lot of followers that someone has.
That is interesting logic. I think that's about right. This brings me to your first Twitter pick, and it's a study from Georgia Institute of Technology on how we tweet. Do hashtags change our communication etiquette?
Yeah, so what was interesting from this study from Georgia Tech is that they found that people use more standard language when they're communicating on a hashtag, and more colloquial language, more regional language, when they're using an at mention. And I think this is really interesting because it suggests that when people are using a hashtag, they know they're talking to a broader audience. When they're using an at mention, they're talking really to just their friends. And I think that's a really interesting way of demonstrating that.
So how do we use different words when we direct our tweets to really specific or small audiences, or as you say, just a conversation with one person? How much does that lower the language?
Well, it doesn't really lower it at all. It's just that language exists at different types of levels. There's more casual language that you use with your friends, there's fancier language, and none of those is wrong. They're just different ways of adapting to your audience. And that's something that we've always been doing in person. I mean, you talk differently with a child than you do with your friends or you do with your work colleagues. And we can see that people are also doing that online.
So that's really, I find that fascinating. I wonder if I do that. I'm now psychoanalyzing every tweet I've ever put out.
You should look and see how much you use Australianisms in your tweets to people as opposed to internationally.
Okay, that's food for thought. You're seriously.
I'll be back in a few weeks.
I feel like you're giving me homework without even meaning to. Now, I know you've stumbled upon a book called Wired Style, and it kind of talks about the way our internet language has changed over the years. What's interesting in it?
The really interesting thing about Wired Style is it was written in the 1990s, and it was a guide for people to speak, you know, to use internet language back in the early days of the internet. And so I came across this book. It's out of print, but I had fond memories of it back from my early days on the internet. And I decided to track it down, a used copy of it. And I wrote an article about what some of the stuff was in it. So it uses these words that you remember them, but you haven't seen them in so long. Web rings, everything cyber, portals, netiquette, chatterbots, F2F, face-to-face, which you're like, oh yeah, that one. Or another term for F2F was face mail, which I really don't think anybody uses. So that was been really interesting to dive back into that book.
Face mail.
I know, I want to bring face mail back.
I really like face mail. This is great. I'm totally bringing that back. You wrote about this for The Toast, and we will post an article on the RN Drive homepage of what you've written. What kind of responses did you get from readers?
I think people really enjoyed it. I had some people say that, oh, this term that you said nobody uses, I said nobody uses F2F anymore. And some people said I still use it. So obviously, you know, what nobody uses anymore is, you know, a question, to a certain degree, a question of judgment. But a lot of people said, oh my God, I remember this. I used to have a copy of this book. Or I can't believe we used to use these terms. You know, I think people really enjoyed it. It's kind of like those 90s kid BuzzFeed quizzes that go around, you know?
Yeah, it's a bit of nostalgia for the 90s when we wrote our first emails. Remember that, your first email?
Oh my God, I remember my first email account and it had nothing in the inbox. That was the day.
Now it's the opposite, isn't it? It's like, stop! Yeah. Stop the emails! Now, it's a tradition on RN Drive that you offer us a follow Friday. Who's yours?
So my follow Friday is Chaucer Doth Tweet at Livostra GC. But if you look up Chaucer Doth Tweet on Twitter, and this is somebody who pretends to be Geoffrey Chaucer on Twitter. And so he uses the kind of Middle English spellings, and, you know, makes jokes about both technology and, Middle English stuff. It's just a really fun account to follow. I enjoy it.
It sounds hilarious. Thank you so much. I am really going to think about every single thing I put out there now.
Well, I'll have to stop analyzing you because you'll be overthinking it.
Thanks so much. And that's Gretchen McCulloch, a linguist and a writer with a specialist interest in language on the internet, speaking to us via Skype. She tweets at Gretchen AMCC and also has a blog called All Things Linguistic.